Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of your many Tuesday Morning Show hosts, and I'm here today with somebody really interesting, but I'm going to keep it a secret until after I do the weather. Hope everyone's having a great week and enjoying the little bit of rain we enjoyed last night, and hopefully today too. Here comes a quick weather forecast, and then on to today's interview. So today we can expect showers and possibly a thunderstorm, mainly before 5 p.m., then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 5 p.m. We're only getting up to 75 today. How nice. And doesn't that cool, damp air feel great? Tomorrow, back to sunny days, high near 83, and evenings will be cool, around 55. Thursday, same thing. Friday, partly cloudy, so we'll get some relief from full sun. Same with Saturday. It's going to be a hot day, though. Both Friday and Saturday will be in the high 90s. Oof, hot. Sunday, high near 92. Monday, 93. So hot weather coming, but we'll enjoy this little bit of cool, slightly rainy weather. Well, this is a good segue into weather because we're talking about something that's rather related to weather, but very important to us up here in Idaho Panhandle. I'm lucky enough today to be joined by Dan Smith. And Dan, you are the Regional Airshed Coordinator with Idaho's Department of Environmental Quality. And we've had you here before, but it's been a while. So good morning.
Yes, it has.
So about a year since you were here. And we got your mic going now, too. We had a little moment where you were very quiet.
I'm right in there. Yeah.
Now we can hear you. Yes, very good. These mics at a community radio station, we've got to really keep an eye on them, but we're up and running. Well, anyway, Dan, you were here a year ago, but I'm sure there are new listeners who weren't able to hear you last year. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved in air quality with the state of Idaho.
You bet. Well, I'm a little unusual. I did not come from a traditional environmental quality background. I was a state park manager for many years. My degree is in recreation management, actually, but with a strong natural resource background. And so I went to the University of Wisconsin at River Falls and got my basic undergraduate degree and then went to grad school at Missoula and at the University of Montana and did my research on recreation sociology, of all things, which is how to have fun in a group.
not very close to air quality.
No, not at all. But also, one of the things that I studied was natural resource interpretation, which is how do you tell the story of, cultural or natural ability. So if you ever went like on a nature walk with the National Park Service and stuff, I've had a lot of training in that, and I really enjoy it. And so my state parks were mostly cultural parks. I was 13 years in Great Falls, Montana. I got to do all the Lewis and Clark stuff when the bicentennial was going on. Got to be in Ken Burns' documentary on Lewis and Clark. That was cool.
Pretty neat.
And did a whole lot of stuff. And then when I moved to Idaho, I was down in the central part of the state in the town of Challis, a little dinky town. And I managed an area, the Land of the Yankee Fork Historic Area, which is 400 square miles. Cooperatively managed with the BLM and the Forest Service, and played around with that and had a great time. Had three different ghost towns in my park. Enjoyed the daylights out of over 200 miles of trails to manage. So I really loved that. Did that for 8 years. Then my wife and I made a tactical error. She became the county prosecutor. So after about 8 years of that, after several successful prosecutions, I always joke about it, and I say we couldn't buy gas or groceries anywhere, which wasn't the case, but it got to be difficult. Once our kids started being affected with various criminal elements, if you want to call them that, or the families, more to the point of the criminal elements, it got a little old. So we moved up to Coeur d'Alene, and I looked around for a job and finally found this job working for DEQ. And they wanted somebody with people skills. They wanted somebody that would be able to go out and talk to folks, explain the need for the kind of program that we were really pushing. And so that's how I got my start with DEQ. Didn't really have a strong background in air quality, but, I can pick that stuff up. It's the ability to talk to folks. That's what I got hired for.
That's what it was.
And I'm still here, amazingly enough, talking on the microphone at this very moment.
You are. You're still doing a good job on it. Now, we are going to focus on air quality today. That's your area. That's the area where you're working. But the DEQ handles a few areas of environmental quality.
The DEQ is responsible. We're concentrating on human health. And so you have to look at it that way. Yeah, environmental protection is important, but why? And so we look at how it will affect human health, whether that is, chemicals in water, natural occurring things like, we'll have a chance to talk about hazardous algae blooms, things like that, or algae. I don't know how to pronounce it any more than anyone else does, but I always called it algae when I was a kid.
Me too, and I had a friend from England here 2 weeks ago, and for him it's algae, and yeah. I'm still getting used to that.
Everybody calls it everything. Yes, but the British, they're so different.
Yes, very much so.
In any case, we have, so we do industrial, obviously we permit industrial pollutants. We look at all kinds of different things, water quality, solid waste, air pollution, anything that will affect human health in the environment is our bailiwick. That's what we do.
Yes, and hopefully here on KRFY, we'll get to some of those other topics over the course of the year. But for today, we're going to focus on air quality, and it's a good time because lots is happening in the Department of Air Quality. Should we just start and talk about where is burning and how much of it? Oh, my gosh.
You know, right now, air quality is being affected by wildfire across North America. It doesn't matter where you are, you're going to be affected by air quality. What was it last year about this time? We had big Canadian fires that affected as far as Atlanta, Georgia. And actually, I was kind of glad about that. I hate to say it, but, for the policymakers in our country to get hit with wildfires from British Columbia, of all places, going all the way to Washington, D.C., New York, and Philadelphia, and all of a sudden those huge blocks of East Coast voters are getting polluted by wildfires from Canada. I hate to say it, but I was kind of glad it went that way because all of a sudden they're getting a little taste of what we've been going through every single summer.
Yes, a wake-up call, at least for one summer.
And, it's tragic to think of, other people being affected by it, but, a wake-up call is a good way of putting it. And we're back in that situation again. Here we have the Durkee fire over in Oregon has been pumping smoke to southern Idaho, something terrible. Much of southern Idaho has been under an air quality advisory for the last number of days. The Chico fires are coming across as well, and they're having an effect on the same area. We've been lucky here in North Idaho. Just the way the wind patterns have been and the weather patterns have kept the smoke pretty much out of our area.
Yes, I mean, it's staying under 50 a lot of days, and we'll talk about those numbers soon enough. But
right.
Yes, it's still in the relatively safe range.
And I have no idea why, but Lewiston seems to be sort of the cutoff area. And of course, we have the fires down near Moscow that are locally going crazy. That'll obviously affect air quality down in that area.
Yeah, it's kind of all around us right now. Lots of fire.
Montana has fires, British yes. Columbia, Alberta, all of half of Canada is on fire, I swear. It's crazy to look at the maps and see what's going on up there.
It sure is. And now, of course, wildfire is not the only thing that we think about with air quality. But let's talk about just basically how do you guys keep track of air quality and for how long have you been doing this?
Okay. I've been the air quality coordinator for the last 4 years. Prior to that, I was running a specialized program, a targeted airshed grant program in the Silver Valley. And for that, I was primarily looking at how do we reduce local pollutants, particularly wood stoves. In these small, narrow valleys in Sandpoint and anywhere in North Idaho, it doesn't matter. We have these little narrow valleys, and they constrict the air quality. Air just doesn't move through these little valleys very much. And it's the Mountain West. There's no way around it. So what happens is when we have inversions where you have a warm layer of air that is capping the cold air underneath, it doesn't allow for things to disperse. In other words, it builds up. It's like a swimming pool. Think of it that way. And so basically these little valleys just fill up with smoke. One of the biggest problems in the wintertime is wood stoves, particularly residential wood smoke. So residential wood smoke was something that we really looked hard at. In the West Silver Valley, we did 200 wood stove replacements. And that's a lot.
That does sound like a lot.
And what we did is we took, and to give you the idea of the factor, an old style non-EPA wood stove, like iron box with a fire in it, puts out about 80 grams of particulate matter every hour. Now, that's a lot. An EPA wood stove, one of the newest ones, puts out 2.
Oh, my goodness. Big difference.
Yeah, and it's literally burning the smoke. So it's more efficient as well. So you burn less cordage. If you were burning 10 cords of wood last year, now you'll be burning about 5.5 or 6. So that's automatically an instant increase or decrease in the amount of pollution you're putting out. But then to be able to decrease it by that much it's a crazy thing. So it really worked. So it was out of attainment with the National Air Quality Standards, and now we're in attainment. So as the Lone Ranger said, my job is done here, and we moved on. And so I became the coordinator for all 5 North counties in the Panhandle, and that's where I am now.
Yeah, and do you still work on those types of issues, the winter inversions?
I do, and we're still working on. I'm doing a wood stove changeout program in the town of St. Mary's. I have advocated for a statewide program doing similar things, and unfortunately, we haven't been able to get funding for that. But keep pushing for it. And, work on local ordinances. We work on education. You know, this interview is part of my job. I go out and I educate people in any way we can.
That's right. Well, obviously, your wood smoke fire is a big deal, and reducing that's very helpful. What other areas of air quality do y'all work on?
Well, it's funny. It just occurs to me. I didn't even answer your question. You said, how do we monitor the air quality? And let me go into that a little bit. First of all, we have very expensive instrumentation. And we have one air quality station, if you will, or monitoring station in each one of the counties. So, we work on all these things, and they're easy to find. They're right online. If you want to go on to the Idaho air quality map, on the DEQ map online, you can look exactly at what they are. They have hourly readings, and you can tell exactly what that particular monitoring station is going to do. Now, we try to choose the most representative site that we can, but there's some practical aspects to that, and so each little valley is going to have a separate air quality within that. So we use in broad generalities, and we can look at bigger trends. So what's going on here in Sandpoint might be different than what's going on up in Bonner's Ferry or down in St. Mary's or in Pinehurst, any of these different places. So when you look at that, think in broader generalities. We're looking at bigger trends.
Yeah. So, for example, if you lived high on a mountain, your air quality might be different from, for example, living in Sandpoint.
Absolutely. Or if you live up on, on the Paradise Road up by Bonner's Ferry, it'll be different than the Monitor, which is right down in the valley in Bonner's.
Okay.
So it'll be different.
And individuals monitor the air quality, too, and you can find that online.
They do. Online, there's an outfit called Purple Air, and they're a little home-owned. They cost about $300, and you hang that in, a representative area. You wouldn't have put it right downwind to your dryer vent. Probably not a good idea. But what you want to do is find a representative area. And then that, it's all internet-based, and that goes right into the overall program. If you go to the EPA's Air Now site, that actually has the Purple Air data on there, where these people, private little monitors, are out there. And they're fairly accurate. They're obviously not as good as our, $50,000 outfits, but you can't compare a $300 deal to a $50,000 one.
Understood. Hey, Dan, I'd like to back up for just a moment. We're learning about how to monitor air quality and things that we're looking for, but I haven't asked you an important question, which is, why do we care if we have consider ourselves healthy individuals? I know people with asthma, et cetera, are very worried, but what about the rest of us?
Air pollution affects everybody. It doesn't matter. When you're looking at particulate matter is what we monitor mostly. Particulate matter is very small particles. We look at particularly the particles that we have two different standards, actually. Back up a little bit. We have particulate matter that is 10 microns in diameter, and that's things like road dust. So you would find that, you know, if you go by a construction site, you're going to find 10.5 stuff or 10 micron stuff. The thing we really worry about is the stuff 2.5 and smaller. 2.5 microns actually has the ability to penetrate through the areoli in your lungs and into your bloodstream.
Mm.
Those are things like very fine smoke particles. Viruses are another one that will penetrate. Any little teeny tiny particle like that are what we are measuring. Now, when you look at smoke, smoke is composed of a whole lot of different chemicals. I mean, there's the actual soot part, the carbon-based part, but it also carries any number of other things. We call them volatile organic compounds, like the benzenes, the other compounds that are produced but when you burn anything, virtually anything, from wood to gasoline to diesel fuel to whatever, has these VOCs in there and particulate matter because they all produce smoke of some form. So those are the kinds of things that we're measuring. And what they do is they get in your bloodstream, and some of them are really highly toxic. Some of them are not very good. When you look at traditional studies of air pollution, you'll find that hospital admissions spike. And they're not only those people with like asthma, COPD, or other pulmonary issues, but it actually will affect heart, brain function, all kinds of different things. So air pollution is very, very much something that we need to pay attention to. You know, you look at these pictures of people in like Beijing or Calcutta or someplace like that, and we think, oh yeah, you know, those guys, they got terrible air pollution. I got news for you. We have forest fires come through here. Our air pollution is just as bad. So protect yourself. Figure out a way to keep that stuff from going into your body because it goes all the way through your body. A lot of people don't get that. They think it's only in your lungs and you cough it up. Oh no. No, it's flowing through your body just like any nutrient, you know? It's bad.
Yeah, we don't want it healthy, whether we're healthy or compromised. So something to pay attention to. Well, is it a good time to talk about how we do our best to take care of ourselves when the air quality is poor?
It's easier than it seems. For particulate matter especially, I recommend a couple of things. First of all, if you know it's really bad air outside, don't go outside. And, you know, that sounds funny. But having said that, where does your inside air quality come? It comes from outside, right? And so, and good ventilation systems like we have here in Idaho, you know, no matter how tight your house is, you got to get air from someplace. And so it's going to come in. So one thing I recommend is change a filter in your, if you have a forced air furnace or air conditioner, change your filter. Get a good, get as stiff a filter, or they have different ratings, right? And so MERV is what one of the ratings, MERV 13 filter is really a top-notch filter. If your furnace can handle it, and you might want to call your HVAC person and find out if the MERV 13 is appropriate for your system.
And that's because they slow down the airflow. They're such good filters. Is that right?
That's correct. And they put extra strain on the fans and the circulation system.
Got it.
But the neat thing about that is it works with both your air conditioner and, of course, your furnace. So that'll help. The downside to that is when we have these big pollution events that we will have, anytime it's over 100 on the AQI, I issue an air quality alert. That closes down all outdoor open burning. So at that point, there's no forestry going on. There's no nothing. Now, hopefully right now, I would hope that there isn't a whole lot of people out there burning in the forest anyway. It's tinder dry out there. Don't do it. But from an air quality point, there's no point, you know, we don't control it from that point, unless we have an AQA or air quality advisory. At that point, then nobody gets to burn anything.
Burn. But it's still there's still a problem because it's forest fire, smoke, and all that. So
that is correct.
It won't necessarily go away, but at least we don't have to pile on.
It won't. So anyway, with if you replace your furnace filter, you're going to have over time, because it circulates through the house and then it recirculates and recirculates, you'll have to replace that filter because it's really getting a lot of stuff out of the air. That gets expensive. You don't want a MERV 13 filter is more expensive than a regular filter. Most people change their filters. If you're like me, maybe you know, I'm bad at changing out my filter, so I don't do it very often. And it's a pain in the butt because I got to go down and I got to do it. But there's another way of doing it, and that is to create a little do-it-yourself air filter. The one that I prefer is called a Corsi Rosenthal box. And you basically build a little box out of 20-inch air filters. So you have four times the filtration area and a box fan and some cardboard. And you tape it all up. And if you want to have fun, I have a six-year-old grandson. And he and I got the duct tape out and we made a Corsi box here last week. A six-year-old and duct tape is as much fun as a guy can have. I'll tell you what, watching this little kid build this model of a functional, creative air quality filter that is highly functional. They work really, really well. And they cost less than $100. And they're just as good as some of the commercial HEPA filters that you can buy. You go down to the hardware store, go to Costco, go to Lowe's, any of these places. They'll sell you an air filter that is very effective. But they're also going to cost you about $300 or $400, and you're going to have to replace the little dinky filters that they have in there, which work really well, but they're going to cost you about $50, $60 every time you have to get a new filter in there.
Yeah, so the Corsi box can be easily exchanged out and redone, and it's pretty inexpensive.
Right, nice. Right, and they're extremely effective. So I recommend the Corsi box. And if you don't want to build the box, even just taking a MERV 13 filter and strapping it on the back of a box fan and running that is helpful. And where it's really particularly helpful is put it in your bedroom at night where you really got to get a good night's sleep, right? Put it in your bedroom, close up your windows. You'll be breathing, at least for that time, good clean air.
Okay. So this is maybe an out there question, but Having lived in Minnesota where we're closed up in the winter, we don't try not to let much air in, and it happens here in Sandpoint too. Do we ever have to worry about having enough oxygen in our air? Is that
no,
a concern?
No, you can get by. There's plenty of oxygen coming in.
Okay.
You know, I mean, got to use your head, but
right.
It's just like anything. And believe it or not, we produce most of our pollution, our indoor pollution is caused just by us. And think about that. We're always spraying, whether it's, you know, cleaners around the house, disinfectants, Lysol, all kinds of stuff. Aerosols go into the air. Cooking is, you want to see your particulate matter go on, fry some bacon, and you'll see your particulate matter go right through the roof. It's you know,
cooking.
We're messy creatures.
One would not think that cooking would be a factor, but I can think about that and,
of course,
understand it.
Candles, you know, my wife really likes those smelly Christmas candles in the wintertime, and I'm like going, oh, my Lord, because you light up a bunch of those in the house, and you'll see your particulate matter go right through the roof.
Wow. Well, we're going to delve into indoor air quality here in a minute, but I think we'll just take a minute and have a song break and come back and talk indoor air quality and maybe a little bit more about outdoor air quality. And of course, understanding the numbers will be important too.
You bet. Sounds good.
If you're just joining us, listeners, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, one of the Tuesday Morning Show hosts, and we're having a great talk this morning with Dan Smith from the Department of Environmental Quality all about air quality. And it's important right now, folks, because it could change in a second. And on that note, we've got a great song, which is, for all of you who love old songs that talk about air, And that was Air Supply, or The Air That I Breathe, not Air Supply, The Hollies with The Air That I Breathe. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported community radio for the Idaho Panhandle. I'm Julie Calamine, and we're back with Dan Smith from Idaho Department of Environmental Quality, and we've been talking about air quality. It's been great so far. During our song break, we decided we should look at the big picture for a minute. So, Dan, what is going on over the country, and how has it been doing over time? And then maybe come back to our local trends.
You bet. So, interestingly enough, air quality nationally has improved. And I think a lot of it is the fact, you know, that we've had the Environmental Protection Agency has been around for about 30 years now, and we've been working and working and working towards improving air quality on a standardized basis, and monitoring air quality and doing everything else has worked out well. So we have a whole bunch of individual agencies at work. In Idaho, DEQ is the main agency. In other states, you have individual, good example is Washington. Washington has fire or air quality districts. So there's the Spokane Air Quality District, et cetera, all the way across the state. Oregon is very similar. And that trend goes across the way. So everybody is organized slightly differently, but we're all pulling together to make our air quality better is I guess, the easy way of putting it.
Yeah.
We communicate well.
And during the break, we were talking about, of course, the smoky fire times that we have here in the West. And I made the assumption that the air quality must be getting worse and worse and worse. And you told me that's not necessarily true.
It isn't. And there's two ways of looking at air pollution. There's things that we can do something about. You know, we can control. A good example might be prescribed burnout in the national forest. We can control when we do that so that we can do it on days that are more conducive for dispersion of that smoke and get it out of the valleys. Then there's things we can't do anything about. Wildfire, a lightning strike comes along, starts a fire. We try to put it out, but we can't. Or it comes in from another country like Canada or another state like California and Oregon. What can we do locally about those fires? Well, not much. We just got to just suck it up and take it, you know? I mean, there's no way we can control that. So when you look at it that way, and that holds true across the country, you know, same thing as I was talking about earlier, British Columbia wildfires were affecting Atlanta, Georgia. Holy cow.
Right. We just have to deal with that until it ends.
You know, we can give Canada firefighters and everything else, but the fact of the matter is that as the climate is warming, our forests are getting drier and drier. We're gonna keep having lightning storms. You can't stop them. We still have people that are out there doing silly things, like this guy in California that pushed a burning car into a coulee and started the fire down near Chico. People are people. They still do stupid things. How do you avoid that? And so you can't do much about that. But what can we do locally? We can take care of our wood stoves in the wintertime. We can pay attention to the AQI and not do any open burning. Like if we just cleared some property in the backyard, we got a big pile of brush. When do we burn that? Do we burn that when it's wet and produce a lot of smoke? Do we let it dry out and burn it when it's dry? Maybe in the wintertime when we have snow on the ground and we have good dispersion. Look at the air quality. Look at the inversion situations. Go on to our website and read our burning recommendations. You know, all that information is available. We just got to use our head.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we can do as individuals.
Right.
And, of course, the bigger picture of wildfires and warming climate, well, that's a bigger topic, one that we won't solve today, but definitely.
No, but, you know, I think recognizing that it's happening is a big part of it. And we have some people say it's perfectly natural, and I could argue that everything that people do is natural. You know, we're just another one of the numerous organisms crawling around on this face of the earth, you know.
Sure.
Everything's natural in a twisted kind of way.
Right, but we would hope we're a little smarter than some of the other organisms and can work on this.
We could argue.
We would hope that can still happen. All right, so numbers. Let's go back to these numbers for a moment. You touched on PM 2.5, PM 10, and then also our AQI, which is
right
indoor quality something.
It's the air quality index is AQI stands for.
Yes.
The AQI is something, and hopefully everybody has seen something along this lines. We have little colors. It's color coded, you know, because everything nowadays is color coded. So green obviously means this is the best air quality, and we call that good. Then the next quality is yellow, and that's moderate air quality. And there's things that moderate air quality, you know, it's probably okay. But some people, if you're an asthmatic, you might have some problems there. If you have COPD, you know, you're going to be able to start feeling it. At the upper end of moderate, you're getting into situations where, you know, you better start paying attention. Healthy people, probably not a big deal. And then the next level is when you get into the red category. And red category is where I will issue an air quality advisory. And that is where it will affect people, particularly people with health issues. If you have asthma or have a tendency to have an asthma attack, you better be paying attention during an air quality advisory. We want you to limit your outdoor exercise under those situations. So a good example is, you know, here it comes to be August. Every little high school football team is outside running around in their pads and stuff, breathing down the most polluted air of the year when the forest fires are burning. We would like the coaches and the parents to pay attention to that and get those kids into a cleaner situation. Take them into a school with a good filtration system and let them exercise in there. Use your head. You don't want to be increasing your pulmonary intake of these things while it's really high. Above that, it gets into the very hazardous. And at that point, everybody ought to be really getting inside, get one of our Corsi boxes going, pay attention, because that's actually hazardous. And those are the situations where we see normally healthy people going into the hospital with major issues. So, you know, pay attention. When we issue with those advisories or when the AQI gets into that hazardous level, it's a 1 to 500 scale, and it's not really linear, you know, the different colors are indicative of what type of actions you should be taking.
Right. And of course, some of us have the ability to do that, but then there are people with jobs that are outdoors. It's got to be very tough for them.
It's hard. You know, and I was one of those people when I was in college. I was fighting fire, and, you know, I was out on a Forest Service crew, and you know, you got a little handkerchief over your mouth, which does virtually nothing. And we were out in smoky situations for months on end. So I'm sure that it had a health effect on me.
That's right. So when we look at the AQI, is it a combination of the 2.5 particles and the 10? How do they come up with that number?
It's actually a combination of a variety of things. In other places, we use ozone as well. Down in Boise, they have a bit of an ozone issue. We don't have so much of it up here. Spokane has a little bit. They measure the ozone, and they'll do an alert based on ozone levels. Coeur d'Alene, we really don't have any problems. Actually, North Idaho, we have ozone monitors out there, but it's not even worth reporting because we have really low numbers. So what we're looking at is a particulate matter. And the one that is the most curious and the one that we have to pay the most attention is particulate matter under 2.5 microns.
Those tiny ones that get into your bloodstream.
The ones that go right to your brain and your heart and into your fingers, toes, kidneys, you name it, it's everywhere. So we look at that. And there are two different standards for this, Julie. This is what's interesting. From the EPA point of view, you have two different standards. You have a daily standard. And a daily standard, anything over 35 microns in a meter squared of air is a cutoff. That's where we start taking, that is when I issue air quality alerts, is when it goes over 30. So that's one step. Then you have an annual standard. And an annual standard is where you take every hour of every day over an entire year, and you average it, okay? And that standard is right now, it was 12 microns per meter squared, and that's how we measure it. You know, you take a volume of air and you measure how many of these particles are in there.
And that 12 microns is for this area?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, it's 12 microns. I'm sorry. 12 micrograms.
Okay.
Little teeny. Yeah, it's weighted. It's not. Yeah, it's not the size of the particle. I'm sorry. I was. They're two different things. But so you weigh the way we do that is we have a little filter. So every one of our monitors has this running tape that moves, and every hour it goes through there, and then it does a XRF, X-ray analysis of the particles on there and figures out how much is in there. And then one of our other ones that we use is an actual filter that the filter gets weighed, sent off to a lab and weighed, and so we know exactly how much of this stuff is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have people that go out and take good care of these monitors and stuff. So this annual standard is different. So it was until last year, the annual standard was on average, every hourly rating should be less than 12 micrograms per hour. Okay. So what do you do? The EPA decided that standard is too high. So they lowered it. Now it's at 9 micrograms per hour. And so that establishes whether you're in attainment with what are called the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. We call them the NAACs because, you know, it's an acronym. We're government. We got to have an acronym. Mm-hmm. And so the NAACs has improved. So the annual standard, which is what we're aiming for, has now gotten stricter.
And what will that affect industry, I suppose, or
it will affect industry. It will affect it doesn't have any effect until you're out of attainment. So in other words, if your annual standard is above that 9 micrograms per hour on it, as we measure it, then all of a sudden the area will be determined to be out of attainment with the National Air Quality Standards. Now, it gets even more complicated than that because there's a formula for doing it. It's like anything, you know, it gets really wacky. So we take, it's a 3-year standard. It takes 3 years to go out of attainment. So you might have a couple of bad years and that pushes it up high. You might have a better year and that lowers it. But the 3-year running average is what we look at. And if you have a 3-year period where it's above that standard, then all of a sudden the EPA has the ability to come in and do some fairly, some would, you know, in North Idaho, they'd call it government overreach, but they can come in and they can start regulating industry. They can start telling local communities, you must have an ordinance. You must have a situation where all wood stove use is going to be curtailed. Mm-hmm. Well, as you can imagine, in North Idaho, that'd go over like a lead balloon.
Well, yes, and I had another thought while you're talking that it could come back to the Forest Service too, right?
It does.
Yes.
It absolutely does. And so how do we, you know, it behooves all of us to keep our air pollution under there. Now, having said that, nationally, we're going lower and lower every year. And I think it's because we have tightened these standards a little bit and we are paying attention. But the fact of the matter is that our atmosphere is a limited resource. We have this thin veil of air wrapped around this little planet of ours. And you know what? And this is my only original quote. I've never heard anybody say it, but I'll pass this on to your listeners. And that is that air is the single most public natural resource there is.
Think about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, great minds. But the whole thing is we can't control. Our air is China's air, is Brazil's air, is South Africa's air, is Antarctic air. Our air, we can't control it. It goes where it will. You know, you hear these people, let's take giant fans and put them up there and blow all that Canadian smoke back north to them. Well, it's not their air. It's not our air. It's everybody's air.
It's the world's air.
Right.
It sure is.
Right, and we're not making more of it.
That's right.
It's all of our responsibility to take care of it.
That's a great note on which to end the outdoor air discussion. I'd like for us to run back to indoor air quality for a moment, too.
Okay.
During our break, we were talking about what we're looking for in terms of improving indoor air quality, and it's so many things, isn't it, Dan? Mold, viruses. Tell us more.
It is. There are so many pollutants that we produce ourselves, for people with allergies, you know, that pet dander. Who thinks of pet dander? But that's a particulate, and that's what sets off our allergies. You know, we got our mattresses are full of cooties, for lack of a better term. And
pillows.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, dust and all the other things that we see, you know, you see the white glove treatment and stuff and people walk around. Well, all that stuff is indoor air quality. The neat thing about this Corsi Rosenthal box is it helps control all those things. It even controls viruses. So one of the advantages, like during COVID, everybody was freaked out about these airborne viruses. You know, somebody coughs, all of a sudden there's this cloud of COVID floating around in the room. The Corsi box actually was able to reduce that quite a bit. And, you know, so there's great advantages to putting one of these things together. And I can't recommend it highly enough. Go on out there, it'll cost you about $70 to begin with. And, you know, and like I say, it's fun to do, you know.
Every household needs one is what I'm hearing.
Right, right. Yes. I've got two. I've got one upstairs and I've got one down in the basement. And, you know, I put one in my bedroom. When we have air quality events, I have two in my office. I have a little dinky one that I made out of 10-inch filters, and then I have a bigger one, 20-incher, that I've taken to the fair and a variety of other places to show people how they work. You know, and it's easy and highly effective.
So, listeners, I would say two takeaways so far from Dan Smith are, one, construct yourself a Corsi box, and take a look at air quality and get yourself to, well, it's called not, tell us again, the website we want to get to for air quality, favorite.
There are two. The one that I suggest for most people is the EPA has one called airnow.gov. Yep. Just type in airnow and it'll fly up.
All right.
And they have a smoke and air quality map that it's called the fire and smoke map. And it has all the air quality monitors nationwide, both the private ones, these the Purple Air ones that we were talking about earlier, as well as all of the governmental air quality monitors out there. So you can see the plumes of smoke coming across. You can see the air quality as it goes, and you can really mark your trends. And it's about an hour and a half behind. You know, it takes a while to compile all that and get it on the internet, but it really is quite good.
Sure, that's not bad to be within 1.5 hours of, you know, the timing.
And you can see the trends on there. If you go to the individual monitors, there's a little bar down below that shows the hourly trends. So you can see, is it declining? Is it going up? How do you, can you predict the future? And typically at night when the inversion level comes in, the what we call the mixing layer lowers almost every single evening. And so, you know, if you were flying an airplane, you'd call it the ceiling. So like right now, if you were to look outside, you can see that the clouds are pretty low, right? And then later in the summer, you have these updrafts and you get the big billowy cumulus clouds. And at that point, the mixing layer is really high.
And that's a good thing, I think I'm hearing. We want the mixing layer up higher.
You want it up higher. And then that inversion, that's the layer where that warm air comes down. So when we have an inversion, that mixing layer is really low to the ground. And any pollutants that we're generating down here close to the surface, they're not going anywhere. They're going to just stay right in our little local valleys. You know, once it gets up above the height of the mountains or the height of the valley peak, is there such a thing as a valley peak? Anyway, you know, once it gets above the mountains and things are able to mix and move out and disperse, then you're pretty good. It's concentrations that we're worried about.
All right. So we've got to keep an eye on that. Well, Dan, it's gone so fast, but we've talked for almost 50 minutes now all about air quality. I hope you listeners have taken note and been interested throughout this great interview. But as we come to a close, I guess I'd just ask if you have any overall comments or advice for listeners who are concerned about air quality.
You know, pay attention. Pay attention is it's like anything. If you pay attention to something, you're probably going to be okay. Look at our websites. Go to Air Now. Take some proactive steps, reduce your air pollution, your own stuff, and just enjoy yourself. Because in a lot of ways, it's fun.
Yeah, it's fun until it's super smoky, but it's fun to learn.
But, you know, when it's really bad, everybody knows. It's when it's sort of bad that you got to pay attention.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's been a very informative hour, Dan, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming in. I understand your time with DEQ is limited.
I'm pulling the plug. I'm going to retire at the end of September, and I'm going to go off and start. I plan to screw around the rest of my life.
Oh, nice. And keep your lungs healthy and watch that air quality.
I will do that.
Very good. Well, listeners, this has been Dan Smith with Idaho Department of Environmental Quality, and he's been filling us in on what to look for in terms of air quality, what we ought to know about it. And I just think it's been great. So thank you again, Dan. And we're going to go out with a song, and if we have a bit of time, I'll give you a nice update on what's happening here at the radio station. So here comes Phil Collins with, of course, In the Air Tonight.